morning. Welcome to members and to our guests from ESCOM today and to everybody else. I think before we even do the agenda, maybe I should do the agenda first, then we do introductions, then we do apologies. The agenda that brings us together this morning here, we have requested ESCOM to come and brief us on the security of power supply for 2010, as in the World Cup. And I would like to extend that to say to 2010 as in the calendar year. Yeah, thanks. Welcome, Comrade Rasim. And thanks for that. But we don't end there, because we think that South Africans deserve better, not only for the World Cup, but beyond the World Cup. So we would like you to inform us if all systems go for security of supply for the tournament, because if there are problems, our image will go down the drain in a big way. Not only the image, but many other issues, including those that are economically related from now henceforth. We also thought that because ESCOM has been granted fairly recently, last week only, a 3-year tariff hike increase by NERSA, we should have a brief discussion with ESCOM on what their take and their analysis is of the impact of that tariff hike for the next 3 years. I must inform the committee that I've had preliminary discussions with ESCOM from Thursday last Friday over the weekend and yesterday about two things. The first one, I would like to apologize on behalf of ESCOM for not being able to send the presentation in good time to the committee for the committee to get the results before today's meeting. They have been grappling with preparing a presentation for us for the NERSA tariff hike, because unlike in the past, they have not yet received a full package, and it takes a bit of time to do the analysis that we require. So much as I breathe down their neck, as the committee instructed me to do with many previous presentations, that we must receive presentation in good time, I would like to remind the committee that we only took the decision in last week's committee meeting Tuesday to ask ESCOM to come and brief us. So we only communicated to ESCOM last week Tuesday, and by Thursday they were already asking for, you know, saying that it's difficult because they are still only beginning to grapple with the analysis of the tariff hike. And then I still said to them, Friday is the deadline to submit the presentation. And by Friday through the day, they were still continue to communicate their difficulties. I even went to the extent of meeting them over the weekend, both telephonically, and I had a personal interaction that was not to be, because I got involved in a Finnish freak accident. But we were going to meet at O.R. Tambo to understand exactly what their problem is, not to be able to send us a presentation. But I have tested their assertion, and I think that it is legitimate and valid that they are not able to give us a full presentation of the impact of NERSA, that is still early days. They would need another week or two or so to do so. But what I put to them also was the intention that we have met on our program the issue of a comprehensive funding model for ESCOM, also as related to the energy mix path that we have chosen. So we have agreed with ESCOM that that issue of the impact of the increase, together with the funding model and the issues that we have mapped of the energy mix path, especially the funding model, we will take up together, not only with ESCOM, but with the interministerial committee that has been set out by the head of state to look into the same issue. So when we meet them fairly soon, we will not only be doing the NERSA terms-like and implications on ESCOM's operation and including the issue of security of supply, but we will be meeting to pave the way for many, many engagements that will look into the funding model, including the public hearings that we have met in our schedule. So members, on behalf of ESCOM, I would like to apologize for you. I think I've done my best, and they have done their best also to send you the presentation before time, but it was not possible. So we will be meeting fairly soon with them to tease out further the issue, not only of NERSA, but of the funding model, but not only with themselves, but with the interministerial committee. So I'm saying we need to plot that again on our program as the committee. So that is the agenda. But because I've already spoken much, I think before we even do apologies and introduction, I need to flesh two things before you also, for your consideration as committee. Yesterday was 100 days before the big event. Today is 99 days, and there are clear things that we need to do also. Like you see, we've distributed the flag to each one of you. Maybe we should do an oversight visit, unpronounced, to the houses of MPs who sit in this committee, to check if you are hoisting the flag, at least in the houses where you live in Cape Town. Because we are, as ordered by the Deputy President yesterday, to fly the flag high and to sing the national anthem and to show pride, pay pride in hosting the event. Now, this brings me to another proposal that I want to put before the committee. In my engagement with ESCOM from last week until yesterday, both by email, telephone, and otherwise, the issue of security of supply at the stadium, bearing in mind what happened during the Confederation Cup, arose. And it became very clear that in some instances, especially the incidents that were conflict incidents, I think it was in Bloemfontein, in Loftus-Versfeld, and in another stadium, where in the middle of the match, lights went off, went out. We asked ourselves, what are we going to do? How sure are we that it's not going to happen? And I want to put a proposal to the committee for consideration, even if we don't do it today, and conclude this proposal today, that we conclude it next week. The possibility of visiting the problematic stadia, and there are three, where ESCOM is not directly supplying electricity, where it's distribution, and at a certain point, and it is the responsibility of the local municipality to make sure that the light will be on in those stadia. I propose that together with the portfolio committee of sports, we go and visit those stadiums, and we ask ESCOM in the meantime to apply their minds to what solutions they think can be. Because if one match for 5 minutes, the lights are out in one stadium, it's crisis enough for us, for the country. It's one thing we cannot afford. So I think we should consider that as a possibility. But if we are not able to say, to consider it today, I think we can finalize it next week. The other thing, members, we were invited to the, most of you did come, to the IPEP meeting with the IDC. Is it IDC? DCI. One issue, we were taking notes, but there are issues that I took notes on that I thought I would put before the committee. The desire for local content, which is correct, for economic growth, which DTI raised, and the problems around the policy framework for preferential procurement, the bottlenecks arising out of this. Since that meeting, which we all attended last week, I had gone out of the way to have a brief discussion with DTI and to have a brief discussion with some procurement managers in the SOEs that fall under us. And they have really identified the bottlenecks that need to be circumvented or that need to be corrected, either by amendments to regulations or amendments to legislation. Because as the regulation stands right now, and the process of even tightening it up, the way it stands right now is excluding the possibility of bringing local content, factoring in local content. Now, this is critical because in the next 3 years, we are going to spend 856 billion rand in infrastructure. If we don't do that, that money is going to be to go abroad, because the procurement processes right now are disfavoring soliciting of services and products from the country. That is the reality of the situation. That ever since we put the preferential procurement framework in place, we have never really looked into whether it is yielding the desired results, and it is the reality that it is not. So somewhere in our progress, we need to plot this issue. SDTI made a call to all of us in that meeting last week. So those are the two things that I want the committee to consider. There are three. The first one is the interministerial committee on the issue of funding model for ESCOM and renewable energy and energy mix. The second one is a brief oversight to the three stadia where there were problems during the contract cut to ensure that the problem will not be repeated, as noted before. And then the last one is the issue of the review of the preferential procurement policy framework to make sure that it does not exclude or it facilitates local content in terms of procurement, especially for the infrastructure bill that we will be unfolding in the next few years. I think I've said a lot. I have noted one hand of Dr. Manyena. Dr. Manyena, over to you.
Chair, I thought if my memory serves me well, nothing happened during the Confederation Cup. At no stadium did we have any problem. It was local matches where something happened. But during the Confederation Cup, everything went
fine. Thank you very much for correcting that very serious mistake that I made. And I was not corrected when I made this allegation to other people. So thank you very, very much. You are going to delete from record, Lisa, and everybody here, that I made reference to the contract cup. It was other matters. Thank you very much. There are other in-house things that we'll talk about at the end of the match. Not the match, but the meeting. There is an issue of Dr. V.S. Morley, Pangelis Yomaniera. Of Amalia Pandey. Mr. Peter van der Allen, we will look into your issue before we. You'll appoint Makar. One of you. There is an issue we need to discuss about the issue of transfer station funds in our own meeting before the end of this meeting. Now, having said this, I think it will be better if each one of you gives me the card and I repeat the phrase and I memorize the name. Okay, thanks. It doesn't help my situation. We'll talk about it later. And any other issues that committee members would like to raise, including the issues of the program, we are going to engage those at the end of the presentation, because I don't want us to come and fight over the program and waste time of the people that we have invited about our guests, as our guests. All the other programmatic issues we will deal with at the end of this agenda today. Design, can you take us, before you take us through the apologies, let's do introduction.
Sorry, can I
have noted you, sir. I have noted you.
it's on a procedural matter, Madam Chair.
Yes?
You have kindly given the agenda. Can we proceed to the formal adoption of the agenda?
Thank you very much. Are you proposing?
Yes, I am, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Any seconder? And thanks for correcting me on that omission. Any seconder?
Just on a point of order. Mm-hmm. So actually point number 5 will be internal health program.
Yes. Yes. So you second him with that correction. Thank you very much. Thanks. Thank you. Let's do the introduction. I'm Tracy Mentor, chairperson of the portfolio committee member of the portfolio committee. I would like our members to introduce ourselves because it's not every day that we receive similar people that are presenting so that they know they are members of the portfolio committee. So we will ask the members to introduce themselves first, then we'll ask our guests to introduce themselves. I will start from the left.
Ibrahim Rasul, alternative member to this committee.
Goldman, member.
Chris Khulub, full-time member of this committee.
Gerard Kourno, member of this committee.
Deputy Mangyanai, member of the committee. Manduana, TPE.
Bobby Lyon, ESCOM.
Kanye Center and your communication services, I'm standing in for Mavis Zaland.
Eva Putin, communication services.
Mario Oriani Ambrosini, member of the committee.
Victor van der Halen, a lid van die committee. Monique van Dijk, member of the committee.
Thanks. We go in a second.
Ryan Dahmer from Edson.
Khan Viharan, Eskan.
Somebody's sleeping.
Oh no,
that's why you're sleeping.
My name is Erika Johnson, I'm from Eskan.
Alvin from Eskan.
In the committee for the task.
And I have failed to acknowledge GPE. Welcome to GPE, and we're happy. What are you doing? You're just saying GPE. We want to know, are you responsible for aviation? Because you could be in the wrong meeting.
I'm actually in the NETT.
Where's your DDG?
She's in Java.
Okay. I'm asking this because we expect them to attend. You will convey this message to them.
Yeah, but she's also welcome.
She is welcome. Thank you very much. I think Mr. Ambrom still has got an eye on you. Thank you very much. We will hand over to ESCOM. You will approach this presentation in the manner that best suits you. Okay. I don't know where my mind is. We forgot to do apologies just before I had to put it up. Yes,
sir? Thank you, madam. Can I just register the apology of Ms. Hajid? She's attending the PAP in African Parliament. Mr. Kubos will not be able to attend the meeting because of business, and Mr. Nonko Nyana. Then Mr. Nana will be registered that he will be late, but he's coming to the meeting.
Do you mind both the new members of the meeting? Okay, thank you very much. Apologies accepted. We proceed. ESCOM, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, maybe just need to say then who does what in amongst the ESCOM team here. My colleague Brian Damas is the head of the generation portfolio in ESCOM. He's accountable for the day-to-day operations of the generation unit, and he's accountable for procuring coal, primary energy, in fact, broadly. And for the enterprise for building new power stations. My colleague Callum Lakshmiharan is the Managing Director of System Operations and Planning. So he's accountable for planning the bulk network, the major part of the energy highways of the country, and for operating it on a day-to-day basis. The National Control and Journalism would be reporting to him. My colleague, Alvin Lester, is a general manager in the distribution business, and he's specifically accountable for Northwest, the chairman. Anything around that Bloemfontein Centrelec challenge, you could certainly ask the man who was very close to the front line there. In addition, Alvin is accountable for running our 2010 project in the business, and he reports to my colleague Ayanda Nova, the head of the distribution business. I'm accountable for the wires and customer portfolio in ESCO. We call it the customer network business.
Before you proceed, you have not registered, and I'm doing it for the second time for you guys again. You have not registered the apology of Mr. Makwana.
Apologies from our acting chairman and acting chief executive. He's with our president on the visit to the UK, so he cannot be with us today. Chair Erika will take us through the presentation and really deal with 2010 and start giving an outlook of the country in the short term and the medium term, as well as the long term. You're correct in terms of we will come back in talking about the price increase and impact on that. We await the regulator's details of the testing, and once we have received that, we will then work through that. Needless to say that we understand the impact on traffic and consumers, but this will have an impact on us in terms of what we've applied for, and we would have to take quite a serious review of our program for our existing business as well as our new business going forward. So we will do that with the IMC feedback when we come back.
Thank you, Chair. And Chief, I then may go to the business of today, which is looking at the year 2010 and just the security of supply in South Africa in general, and have a specific focus on the winter 2010 World Cup event. But just a brief outline, we'll just focus a little bit on the project itself, the ESCOM internal project in around 2010, then going to the South African power system. And specifically then looking at the outlook for the next few years and some conclusions. So, Terry, fully excited about the fact that this is a big event and coming up on African soil, and certainly the global coverage and the footprint and the attention of the world is very, very much clearly weighs on our mind, and it is our focus to look at the impact for brand South Africa. We've got some details of the last World Cup event in Germany 2006. This is a Green Gold report. How many people went to Germany? 3.4 million. The average number of people per game at 63,234 people. The total electricity consumption for those stadia, the 12 stadia, the hospitality areas, and the media facilities was in the order of 13 gigawatt hours. Now, just to give a sense of that number in South Africa last year, we supplied to the consumers 215,000 gigawatt hours. So the stadia of a center of high attention, but in terms of energy consumption, it's a small portion, but obviously very, very high focus and requiring lots of oversight. As you say, not even 5 minutes of supplying gigawatt hours to that power station would be a challenge and a problem for us. So, the average consumption is 170,000 kilowatts. So, moving on. Post the World Cup, those stadiums then generally drop down in consumption to about 3.5 gigawatts. And certainly in the World Cup in Germany, there was a big focus on energy efficiency, energy saving, importing green power from Switzerland as well. So the easy drive. So the total amount of carbon emissions is 2,490 tons. That's the whole event. For the 4 weeks, and because of the high requirements for uninterrupted supply, the amount of mobile generators consumed 660,000 liters. So these are some statistics of the last World Cup event. Moving on to the approach that the security of supply, the approach that ESCOM took to the 2010 project. So Chairman, as I say again, providing power to South Africa is absolutely fundamental. It's a very electricity intensive economy, and we need it up consistently and in good quality and at a good price. This is fundamental if we want to move to meeting the country's aspirations. So with the direction of having the 2010 World Cup, we will be aligned and supported totally where we could. The project objective, specifically the mandate that Alvi and Ayanda as a team have to deliver, is to make sure that there is a reliable electricity supply, that the ESCOM preparations and any risks that have been identified in the last few years are mitigated or treated, and that we deliver a successful World Cup. Sorry, Chair. Okay. Thank you. Is that better, Chair? So, project focus, very clearly. Reliable electricity supply, so this is reliable backbone, and ESCOM readiness, ESCOM preparations, and treatment of any risks that have been identified in the last year. That's the internal ESCOM 2010 project. Moving on. So the 2010 electricity supply chain, this is the case clearly of the entire South African value chain aligning to make sure that an event in the city is secured all the way. As we're all aware, the event will occur in winter, and this traditionally is South Africa's highest demand period because it's cold and our consumers need electricity for heating and for the home. We have generally in those periods of time all our plants out of maintenance, and they would be running to maximum output. The capacity constraints, as you've been aware, that the country has been under time challenges, and I will highlight specifically what our outlook is for the winter of 2010.
It's too fast for my I want to have the only one. And the media, next time when you are late, we are going to lock you out because you are disturbing our facilities. You bumped us against you, you don't even say sorry, you're disturbing us. You must come early. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chairman. The Chair, we're saying that the electricity supply chain has to be aligned totally from the generation division, the transmission division, distribution, to our host cities to make sure there is a reliable supply to all the stadia events and parks that are going to be a key focus of attention in the next 2 months. So the key thing that we are saying is that the critical installations for the World Cup lie within the host center and the ESCOM supply, and in general, besides for the Western Bavaria, would be outside of ESCOM supply authority. And the project that we have been and the preparations that ESCOM has done for the last 3 years has been in reinforcing that backbone, Madam Chair. The generation, the transmission, the distribution, just doing work as requested where the cities would be working, where the host cities may have asked for a reinforcement. Because the key 2010 installations are in a municipality and outside of our supply, direct supply authority, Madam Chair, we've taken an approach that we need to partner with the cities to make sure that that value chain, that electricity supply, is completely aligned and ready to deliver the energy to the city, to the event. So, what do we think is going to be the additional demand for the 2010 event? Chairman, based on the footprint that we have seen in the German World Cup, we believe that we expect about an additional 275 megawatts. That's an additional peak. To put this into context, for the country as a whole, we expect 57,000 megawatts, 37.24 gigawatts to be supplied in the winter of 2010. And 270, that would be 57,240,000 megawatts in relation to the two additional 270 megawatts needed just to make sure that all the stadium events and precinct parks are supplied.
That 57 gigawatts is an additional request.
connected, that is the requirement we would do to supply the 48 million South African consumers in the winter normally. If the peak for South African demand happens in winter, and that's because it's cold and people require additional heating. So we are geared, in fact, our predominant support is geared to meeting the country's winter demand, and then there will be the distribution of 275 megawatts just for the additional activity.
Could you just clarify that the 37,000 is not additional? The additional megawatts for the electricity is 275, and the total of the electrical system is projected to be a 37,000.
Okay. Chair, we are saying our current forecast indicates that at that 37,250 megawatts, we have sufficient generation capacity in the winter of 2010. If required, we can run our open cycle gas turbine of 2,300 megawatts, and that's running on liquid fuel. We've also asked voluntary participation from our customers to reduce their demand. They've in fact rescheduled some maintenance so that they could, and in general, our tariff signal to them would also encourage that sort of rescheduling of maintenance. In the region, Chairperson, we've asked our Southern African Power Pool, our neighbouring utility, if they would increase their exports to us in that time period and hopefully decrease any requirements that they would have from us. Only critical maintenance on any piece of that entire supply chain will be allowed over the 2011 period, Chairperson. We've in fact been, for the last few years, making sure that all maintenance is aligned and ready so that everything is in place for the winter of 2022. Moving on to what exactly is Eskom being responsible for in this power delivery chain? As I may start at the right-hand side, the power station. We've been, as I said, we're predicting 37,240 megawatts, and that's what we have to generate at those power stations. Then we have the, it says TX sub, those are the transmission networks. We then have to move that 37,240 megawatts across the country to where it is needed, the distribution supply point. And from that distribution supply point, it will go to the host cities, the municipality substations, and from the municipality substations, it will go to what's on the left-hand side, all the various key installations. So starting on top, there's the stadia, the precinct, the fan parks, the public viewing areas, broadcasting centers, base camps, training venues, key hotels, so the key FIFA installations, like I said, the hospitality industry is quite a few, so we only focus on key FIFA installations in terms of hotels, and then other key installations, because there will be lots of people, so issues like the police, the command centers, anything that is needed for a city's disaster recovery, those are the things that have been identified by the host cities as their key installations. As Chairperson, that's the most important thing that we're saying. Knowing where the key installation is and the electrical supply route all the way from the power station to that point has been how we've been trying to deal with this. As Eskom, we've been working with our host city in a partnership form to try and identify exactly the electrical link from our distribution substation to the municipality, and then within their network, which exact electrical route does it take to the key event. And we've been auditing and working with them to try and make sure that any challenges, any issues of mutual concern are in fact dealt with. And that has been the process in the last 3 years. So if I can actually just talk a little bit more about those partnerships, Chair. Firstly, with the one partnership, I just go back to the Southern African Power Pool. Last year, we signed a pledge with our Southern African Power Pool members on the 27th of April, where they would actually pledge any excess power they have, any transmission network capacity that they have. They would do any preventative maintenance and clean the services to make sure that all their electrical networks, from the Namibia, Zimbabwe, to the Swaziland Institute, Swaziland, all their networks are all ready if they needed to, if there are any opportunities for trade. if we required. Most importantly, they would maximize their plant production, energy efficiency initiatives, and their load management during the event, if we needed that. So that's the neighbors, Chair. And just showing the next picture, this is the picture of the day we actually signed that pledge in Maputo last year, where the neighbors would align their transmission with ours to make sure we have maximum support. Moving then on, Chairperson, that collaboration with the host cities, the one I referred to slides ago, where we would review the electrical links from all the way from the backbone network down to the actual key site. We established, between ESCOM and the Association of Municipal Electricity Undertakings, a group called the 2010 Electricity Supply Industry Forum. And the forum, as you see, Chairperson, comprised of Municipal Electricity Department, ESCOM, NERSA, Department of Energy, the 2010 Local Organizing Committee, EDI Holdings, and National Treasury. And the point of that partnership in the last 2 years is to share that information on electricity requirements, share the status of preparation, work through issues of concerns and challenges, and to look at possible solutions to identify. It's a distribution holdings company, industry,
electricity distribution industry holdings.
Yeah. Chair, through another venture that we established, so we have a 2010 ESI supply forum, and then we established regional electricity task team, where we looked specifically at those substations that would need support. So, for example, if there was a risk identified that the backup supply between the municipal lighting and the generators is a challenge, as my colleague Alvi can highlight specifically in the Bloomberg case, then there's a risk plan that's been developed within the regional electricity task team to address this and to work together towards finding a solution on that challenge. Coming up very soon, Chairperson, as we are now out of the preparation phase and we're now going into the simulation phase, the last few months of readiness, we're going to simulate our readiness, test our readiness, test our response plan. The specific areas we want to test would be the alignment of communication between all the different country institutions that are engaged in this. So there's the ESCOM Regional Electricity Task Team, there's the National Control, there's the National JOC, Joint Operating Command Center, the Provincial JOC, our Situational Awareness Center, and the various awareness centers or formations within the municipality. Most importantly, we want to test that if some critical event happens, a natural problem, if there was any challenge along the electrical supply network, any problem, how would we, as all these different entities, align to communicate and get the information out as required? So that's what we mean by simulating an emergency and then testing how do we perform as a communications team together. And most importantly, we'd like to be able to test what's the technical responsiveness from our different technical teams if a problem should happen anywhere on the electrical grid.
Will you give us the exact date for these simulations?
Yeah, I can. We can certainly send them. Jimmy's idea is to surprise people when test reflexes, but we will certainly give you the date that we're planning this for the month of March and for the month of May. Sorry?
Yeah, we will
tell you, Chair, what's the date that we're planning these simulation tests on. So moving on, internally within ESCOM, this is how we organized ourselves on this sort of basis for the 2010 megawatt project. We tried to organize ourselves to be able to deliver for the last 3 years all the various issues that needed alignment within ESCOM to try and make sure that we are ready in supplying that secure backbone to the host cities. So on the left here we have the project office looking at the finances of running this project, the risks that the team is looking at and in communication and marketing around that. On the right hand side, in the yellow block, we have something known as project platforms, and each project platform delivers certain products for us. So our audit team will be auditing all the work that the individual divisions have done to try and when a division says we have completed our investment required for this particular region, or we have treated a risk that we've identified, our audit internal audit team will go out and audit and see whether that is in fact so. There's an information technology platform to make sure that the existing platforms that we have, we're obviously reassessing all the support around it and any specific requirements for 2010. We've been focusing quite a lot on demand side management in 2010, green 2010. I'd like to focus more specifically on the technical and capacity. That's at a national level, that's with the national control, would give us the peak demand and the generators would respond in being able to meet that. Regionally, in that technical and capacity block, Jefferson, we'd be saying that every host city's additional reinforcement requirement would be met by the ESCOM distribution unit, and in the Southern African Power Board, as I've mentioned, the alignment of their networks with ours for energy security. The other aspects about 2010 HR, marketing and communications would be just highlighting what we've done to date and obviously explaining the different roles in our stakeholder process. 2010 HR, a lot of people need to be available and on standby during the period from May, Chairperson, all the way until August, when we believe that we'll stand down our project focus. So there's obviously making sure that everyone's issues of housekeeping, as you say, the leave issues, making sure that people are know when they expect it to be on duty, if they're going to any matches, just making sure that we accommodate their needs as well. So that's 2010 HR for us. Security and business continuity, very critical point. I think as a general, this is a general comment about ESCOM every day is subject to a lot of infrastructure theft, people stealing transformers at distribution level or stealing steel members out of major pylons. And part of our challenge, and specifically, so the challenge of security is not necessarily a 2010 focus, but it is a general challenge for ESCOM. So we have to make sure that our security along the dedicated links to those key installations are clearly supported. Chairperson, moving to the next slide. The first phase of our project started in April 2007 to March 2008, and so the focus was on planning, and because the key installations were not in our area of supply, the main challenge was for us was building key relationships to collaborate with our partners. We looked at benchmark studies, and for example, that would be the 2010 German example, and how we could learn from their projects and influence and optimize our own project. And we started the risk profiling in phase one. We then moved from April 2008 to March 2009. We went through a period of looking at all the various reinforcements that needed to be made in the ESCOM backbone supply. And that was simulated for going from phase three, April 2009 to March 2010, which is where we are now still. The main focus at that point was that we needed to host a successful 2009 Confederations Cup and make sure that we were actually in the trial run period phase three. Going to phase four, which is actually what we call putting on the show, from the beginning of April 2010, everything would have been rolled out and audited by our internal auditors to make sure that what there is actually physically on the ground. Final preparations will then be setting up our situational awareness centers, which I said we would test in terms of communication protocol, and then obviously moving on to the actual event. Chairperson, individual generation individual divisional preparations are highlighted on the next two pages. Our generation production plan has been optimized for the winter of 2010 deliver 37,240 megawatts, and that specific requirement of 277.5 megawatts to the installation. Our primary energy division has procured all the coal they required and the diesel that we need if we want to run a backup supply. And the generation division have a continuous monitoring facility where they will monitor all the challenges or activities that are happening at the power station across all the different power stations across the country. In terms of the transmission division, the bulk transmission corridors have been reinforced. My colleague looks like he wants to answer the question. I think it is.
Yeah, we said it to you last time that we will have our cold stocks back at 42 days by the start of winter, and for us we define that on the 1st of May of every year.
Jefferson, as I said, the bulk transmission corridors have been reinforced. The focus now for the next few months will be on having high availability of that equipment all the way up until August. I've mentioned the Southern African Power Pool, and as I've also mentioned, large customers will reschedule maintenance opportunities if they had during the winter season to try and provide additional flexibility in their consumption during the winter 2010 period. Distribution. The final stages of working with the municipalities in reinforcing their supplies are specifically the Bloemfontein and Centenary example designs. There's additional focus on balancing of GSM. I've mentioned the regional emergency exercises that we are planning to carry out soon. And the regional task teams are still working in a high collaborative mode with the host cities. National control or system operations, daily reviewing that demand figure. And they will continue to highlight any requirements they need to secure supply. The other division I'd like to mention is our corporate service division, and they'll be doing the audit for us of our readiness. The company internally, we have a 2010 greening initiative with the Department of Water and Environment Affairs. And lastly, we've asked a sister utility to do a peer review of our readiness, and we're waiting for confirmation of them. This would be a sister utility that has hosted the World Cup before. We're trying to ask the Korean utility that has hosted an event to come and audit our readiness as a peer-to-peer review. Moving on, Chair. I'd also like to highlight it was an incident-free 2009 configuration cut. We had 16 days of live operations last year, 16 matches. We had challenges on the grid in that both cubic units were out at the time, but there was zero electricity incidents affecting matches. Chairperson, that would conclude my specific focus on the winter 2010 and specifically the World Cup, and now we'll move on to generally discussing security of supply in South Africa. If you'd like maybe an elaboration on the sentiment, if you wish, Chair, from my colleague Albi, or from you.
How do you make us
Thank you, Chair. This is a very busy slide, but this is the state of the South African power system. On the left-hand side, you see what we have a little panel there indicating the 27 operational power stations the country has, of which 40.7 gigawatts are ESCOM operational capacity and 43.5 gigawatts total in the country. So there are some power stations that are operated by municipalities. As we know, the coal is largely a coal-based system, and we import 1,500 megawatts from Cahora Bassa in Mozambique. We currently produce returning multiple power stations to increase the available power to the South African power system. We have in the middle there 28,000 kilometers of a line over which we move all the power produced in the generators to where it is required by the consumer. It's a very large network and a very extended network. On the demand side, the figures we have for the South Africa's energy demand show that 29% of South Africa's energy requirement is met by electricity. We highlighted the forecast for the year, 37.2 gigawatts, and the amount of energy we'll be supplying is 227 terawatt hours. Of that energy consumed, 138 industrial customers consume nearly 40% of all of that energy. The largest 40,000 customers consume 75% of the energy, and as residential customers, we have 8 million in the country, and they consume about 20-25% of the energy. Jefferson, the key point about our power system is that there's a very tight balance between the supply side on the left and the demand side on the right, and there's a very thin and extended transport infrastructure between the two, and we believe the situation will prevail for the foreseeable future and requires tight management to keep the balance always moving on. Jefferson, we just wanted to show you the weekly energy trend in the South African power system for the last 3 years. That purple block chip is all the energy that was consumed in 2009. You see dashed lines above it, and that will show you that, for example, for the year 2006, for the year 2007, and 2008, well, not 2007 and 8, we in fact consumed more energy in this country than in the year 2009. And in fact, that by the time the year closed, we in fact sent out 2% less energy 2009 versus 2008. This largely was a reduction in consumption requirements from key commodity producers. Moving on, the weekly demand trend. Once again, showing you a picture that peak demand is still slightly lower than previous years. So, and this year we in fact expected to come back in line with the 2007 peak demand requirement.
Let me just move to highlight the point. Go back to the previous slide. The committee asked us, what is the year-on-year growth of electricity? On that slide you'll see, if you look on the right-hand side, which is the year-on-year movement, the red line being 2010, and we're now tracking the levels of 2007. Giving the year-on-year energy consumption increasing by over 9% from last year to this year.
Today. My apologies to a person. Point again, Brian, would you like to show that picture? Okay. The purple block, Jefferson, is the energy consumed for 2009. The light blue turquoise is the 2006 profile of energy consumed in the country. 2007 is the different blue shade, so we had more energy sent out in those years. And 2008 is the solid blue line. We can see clearly that 2009 we sent out less energy than in 2008, and in fact, when we calculate by the end of the year, shows that we sent out 2% totally less energy as a country in electrical energy than the other year. 2%. Largely, we believe because of the commodity users not producing as much last year. Our big 138 consumers who consume 40% of the demand in the country had pulled back, and that's where a large percentage of the saving came from, of 2%. So weekly peak demand picture, Chairperson. The key point to note that the years 2009, 2008, 2007 are all still in the same ballpark, about 35,000 to 37,000 megawatts, and in fact, we still haven't gone past the 2007 levels, and we're actively trying to manage that peak to make sure that we are secure over every winter. So in general, Jefferson, for the security of supply in South Africa, what are the key issues we have to manage? In real time, Jefferson, national control on the top block on the right has to meet the immediate needs. They've got to keep frequency at 50 hertz, They've got to make sure that power system highway is loaded correctly and that it doesn't have any overload anywhere. On a year ahead basis, a week ahead to a year ahead basis, they've got to make sure that there is enough maintenance window for all the generators to get an opportunity to do all the work they require to keep it in good condition. And for that person, they need generally to have 9 to 12% operating reserve margin. In a real time basis, every single day, to make sure that we meet the power requirement of the country tonight, we have to be 4 to 6% spare over and above needed needs right now to make sure the power is there. The next key question for South Africans in terms of security supply, what's the 25-year ahead look? And we are saying we need preferably minimum 15% to 19% is the regulatory requirement to make sure that we will never run out of power as the country shifts in either due to a cold winter or to demand or economic growth changing and demand in fact changing. 15% reserve margin on a 25-year period day ahead, Jefferson. On a week ahead to year ahead, we're saying to make sure that we are safe, we need at least in the next year, we need to have at least 9 to 12% reserve margin to make sure there's enough maintenance window for all the generators. Today, right now, for this evening, we are carrying 4 to 6% operating reserve margin just to make sure that we are secure for the demand this evening. And everything. So it's the key point about a reserve margin is that it is time based, and you have to take into account the volatility in the demand. So you carry enough reserves today, a small amount of it, because we're pretty clear that we think the demand tonight, this evening in the country, will be in the order of about 32,000 megawatts. So you carry 32,000 megawatts plus 4 to 6% additional on that, just to make sure in case anything trips off, anything fails. We will have a little bit of an insurance policy to make sure the lighting. That 4 to 6% figure, Chairperson, is based on our historical performance of our generators. Once they're on the grid, how secure they'll perform, and they'll be online for tonight. Chair, I hear differently comes to that question. Okay, if I then may move on, I just to highlight that point. The management approach to reserve margin in the country requires us with immediate short-term real-time focus, and we've got to keep an eye on the long-term up to 25 years ahead. A special event like the 2010 World Cup doesn't change any of our security or adequacy requirements. It just requires us to make the site-specific preparations and to be specifically aware of the operational event and aware around the particular event happening. And I think that's the challenge for us, and that's how we contextualize the World Cup event in the field of security challenge for South Africa. Moving on, Chair. We've listed there the key components of reserve margin. And we use the standard CJA definitions. CJA is an international body which we belong to, ESCOM belongs to, as a member, and most utilities globally, in fact. So that's where we share the learnings about what the right number should be for a reserve margin, what sort of the ballpark figure a country should be looking for. So, I would just like to highlight is that there are three ways in which we also make sure that the power system is adequate and secure. So, reserve margin is the most popular one. It will show you, it gives you the broad indication of reliability, and it gives you indication of the long-term, leading to long-term adequacy, and the immediate short-term security like this. The power for tonight. So adequacy for us means medium to long term. Do we have enough reserve to be able to make growth spurts or any problems? And then short term security would mean an unanticipated loss of a generating unit in the next 5 minutes would mean that in the short term we are still secure to meet the country's demand this evening when the peak happens. So the other indicator we highlight though is that there must be enough maintenance window. And total energy requirements in the country must be met. So reserve margin is a broad indicator. Then the second indicator we use is do we have enough maintenance windows? And secondly, are all the country's energy needs met? On the next page, Jefferson, there's just a definition that I mentioned, why we need the short-term and why we need the long-term reserve margin figures. Moving on, coming to the question you asked, what does a developing country need? Now, I've spoken about the ability to meet tonight's supply. Another member body that we belong to, PIMA, indicates that anything below 4 to 6% overall for the country means that we'll not be able to manage the risks happening daily. Short-term economic growth, we believe we need to catch a 5% reserve margin. Because our generator performance can vary, you could have very high performance for a couple of years in a row and then go through a bad patch. We need to carry anywhere between 3 to 13%. Extreme weather, if you have a very cold winter, it could add a few hundred megawatts to your demand. And then totally, if you only follow the bottom end, we are saying 15% is a very lean reserve margin, but has been adequate for our coal-based system. In other countries in the world, they would carry anywhere between 15 to 29% reserve margin. For example, if they have big problems with their generation performance or their weather variability is a lot higher than what we see. Developing countries as a whole, Chairperson, I think there's the benchmark has shown that the number should be minimum 15 to 39%, and other developing countries in general would be experiencing shortages daily, and they do not necessarily have the right reserve margin. Perhaps I could ask any of my colleagues to supplement the developing country specific question.
Sure. Most developing countries, and you look at places like Malaysia, India, I think China you could consider developing in a way because they're growing. All these countries are aiming also to be in this region of between 15-25%. Some do not meet that right now and experiencing supply shortages. Places like Thailand and Malaysia, for example, have targeted between 15-20%. The number will change based on the nature of your mix of generation. So the more, I'll say, renewable energy that you have, for example, or sources where you're dependent on hydro, because that could be affected by drought cycles like Brazil, they would have a higher reserve margin. So Brazil, for example, would target a higher reserve margin. So those are examples that we have.
Chairperson, I think it's very specific on the risks that are being managed in that country. But we believe that the 15% reserve margin within South Africa is at the low end, and based on the performance we have seen of our generators, the weather conditions we experience, and the growth spurts that we have experienced in the country.
So we are critically low in terms of 4 to 5. That's the point you are
trying to make. Not at all. Operating reserve margin on a day-to-day basis is you need to carry less insurance right now, at this point in time on a Tuesday, to make sure for this evening, where we carry only 5%. But that is correct. It's over 25 years, Chair, when we're 20, at least 15%, so that you can manage all the variabilities that could happen over a long period. This is largely because the lead time to build a power station is so long. We need to carry an insurance policy of at least 15%. On a day-to-day basis, you can carry a smaller insurance policy to meet the demand this evening because we understand the performance of the generator. So 4 to 6% of operating reserve for tonight is adequate. For the 25 years, Jefferson, we need at least all the time 15%. I hope I answered that, Jefferson. Thank you. Okay. So Jefferson, then what has been the reserve margin in South Africa? 27% in 1999, and no longer over, and the last of the house that has been commissioned at that point, and since then the reserve margin has been declining as growth has been in the last few years when we've had the power shortages, that's when we've seen the critically low figures as we have. For 2009, Chairperson, the reserve margin improved back to around 16% because there was a drop in demand, as I mentioned, from the large commodity producers and the new generating plant that was commissioned by ESCOM. That's the key message there. Prognosis for the reliability check moving forward. This is the picture just that we expect for the year 2010. The dark green is the demand expected. light green deficit is the reserve, the operating reserve. Now, on a year ahead basis, we said we'd like to carry 9 to 12%. That's the figure there. And then you'll see the solid black line here. That's all the power. That's all the available capacity installed in the country. And that little pink deficit, and there the little pink means that where we commission new service plants to improve the amount of installed plant available. Here we that the space between all the installed capacity and what the country needs. This is why we optimize our maintenance in summer period. All the maintenance is done in these window periods here, so that everything is available for our winter period. So I can highlight again here, the dark green is the demand expected, the 37,200 megawatts. We carry in that insurance policy, the reserve margin for the winter, and that's the solid black line on top is the installed capacity. And as you can see, we have that's our gas turbines that are making also the additional difference there. So we can take clearly from this graph here, you can see during the winter period of 2010, we have adequate generation resources with all of the gas turbines meeting our reserve requirements. This forecast here, as I said, is reviewed on a weekly basis. And this, at this point in time, we are expecting a cold winter. If I could move on. The short-term outlook. Key messages. As I've said, since late 2008, there was a demand drop, which... No problem. Okay. I think the short-term outlook, we are saying there's been an improvement because of demand reduction, generation new commissioning, and generation performance improvement. For the year 2010 in the winter, we think there's a high level of confidence. However, going forward, we have to look at the long term, and we need to maintain the reserve margins for the different time periods at the right levels. And for that purpose, we do need to make sure that energy efficiency measures are in place starting this year, so that as the maintenance season comes back in 2011, we go back into, we will constantly maintain the right balancing. Part of the response from the supply side is that we will be signing up our medium term power purchase program with the independent power producers in the next few months, and certainly with the phase one of the renewable power purchase program will also be signed up. If I could move on to the next slide, we'll show you why we believe that 2010, in terms of energy, these are the three different ways in which we determine whether there is enough, whether it's secure. We believe there's enough energy. In fact, there's 7 kilowatt hours surplus energy for this year. Capacity, we believe it's in balance because all our OCGT plants are available, and that's what the previous slide showed. We have enough space for generation maintenance this year. Just moving below to 2011, we see a problem with getting red there, Chipperson, that the capacity is short by 1,387 megawatts, and we should only allow 7.42% maintenance window for this year. Moving on to 2012, showed you that we have an energy deficit and a peak capacity deficit, and certainly not enough maintenance windows. On the right-hand side here, the supply side and demand side there. Certainly, Chair. The key requirement for indicating security is a reserve margin number. The other ways in which we measure as well whether there is enough is that we need to make sure there's enough maintenance windows and that there's enough energy. For year 2010, those are our numbers. For 2011, because the demand grows 10%, we are saying that over the peak, we see a deficit. We're not reaching all our reserve requirements. And that would mean as well that we try and, in addition, in the summer, we would have to shift some maintenance because we constantly need to meet our demand and reserve requirements. And that's why I'm saying, you know, what the generators are asking us for a window to do their maintenance, we are not getting enough opportunity in summer months because the demand has grown.
How do you explain that to a lay person? To a
Order
that
someone
says
there
is a
higher
risk.
No.
Remember
my colleague. I think the point out of this graph, as a country, from 2011 onwards, until we have the big baseload stations coming in, which we'll see in procedure, and we'll talk about that later, we have to deal with energy efficiency. we do not have enough capacity in the country to meet the requirements. And the maintenance that you see are reducing. We need to do maintenance in order to ensure reliability of our current plant. And if we don't have enough time to do that, simply that puts the plant at risk. And this shows us that our time for maintenance reduces significantly. Our preferred time for maintenance would be for a year period. We would want to do between 8.5% of the time during the year up to 12% of the time during the year. We want to do maintenance. Given the demand growth, in 2012 we'll only have 5% of that time available. The country has to focus on how do we reduce our energy usage. We have no choice but to do that.
Okay, if I may move on. Currently, we are looking at our reserve margin in the next 5 years picture. This slide will show you 2009 we had a 16%, 2010 we have a 15%, and it will decline over the next few years as the country's energy requirements grow and demand grows. We're assuming that we are building, so Majusi, Kusile, and Mpula is all part of that build program, and we've included some of those the IPPs in there in terms of that, but not all of them yet, because they are not yet firm projects. The demand side, we assume intensive demand side management, as my colleague Brian said, will definitely help to try and keep this number at acceptable level for the country. The impact of the recent regulatory determination is still going to be fascinating, as Brian has highlighted earlier. Chairperson, the next slide is just another way of showing if the generators produce all their power on that line of they produce as we optimally expect, and this solid bar below that is what the country needs, that the balance is fairly tight. Moving on, Chair, I think that the medium-term outlook shows you that it is a very tight picture from 2011 to 2013. We need the generators to perform at the high level of 86%. We need the demand side management to be there. And most importantly, we need those IPP high load factor options to come in. Moving forward, Chairperson, in the long run, currently the country has about, we start at the left-hand side, 50,000 megawatts, and over a 25-year period, if we take the moderate growth, we need up to 80,000 megawatts peak demand. Moving on, Chairperson.
Moderate growth
in terms of electricity supply, and it is linked to a particular output. But GDP and electricity growth depends on the intensity of the economic activity.
Can you kind of give us the percentages that is achieved for electricity growth for that period?
Yeah, as my colleague said, it's linked to the energy intensity. So when you talk about moderate, you mean moderate electricity growth. But it does link to a higher GDP growth. The moderate on average is around 3%, and we'll come back to that assumption. The low is just over 2%, and the high is closer to 4% on average over the year. Obviously, there's going to be periods of intense growth and then periods where it comes down and so on. And it is based on work that has been done with our large customers and our large municipalities. So we have worked with them and built it up from the bottom, as well as done a top-down econometric model as well.
So energy requirements are also increasing at a rate to 250,000 kilowatt hours right now, moving up to some in the order of about 500,000 kilowatt hours required in future. Moving into the coal for future capacity needs, and we're talking about the dotted line in the middle here, and maybe if we could start off with the bottom, what is being brought online, the green solid bars is our return to service plant, and then we have this brick building bar here, and that's Majupi, Kusile, and Guna. Then we have the MTPP program, the renewables program, and the DOE IPP, and that is what has been agreed and is being built in, that is in progress in the country at this point in time. As you can see, that the dotted requirement shows you that at some point in 2017, you are no longer meeting the total requirement with a 15% reserve margin, and you need to look at that decision for bolding. So then if I could move on to the last conclusion, up to 2030, the key message shows you that we currently have 43,500 gigawatts. Our current expansion plan shows you the average 3% electricity consumption over the next 20 years. The IRP process starts by the DOE may change the assumptions, but we need to look at the impact of change utilization patterns, specifically around demand management. In order to power the economy, we need to have 20 gigawatts more. Currently, the Eskom Bold program is only 14 gigawatts, and we need to look at how other IPPs are coming to meet the 20 gigawatt need. And we believe that the energy efficiency opportunity is between 8 and 15% total in the country. So the immediate issues we have to consider for that long term, to make sure that we are secure on the long term, is that we need to look at, we need to make sure that Medupi and Kusile power stations need to be completed and on time. We need to look at that decision of a next base load power station being in service by the year 2017. If you do make whether it's a coal based station or a smaller station, there are some lead time items to that third power station, Jefferson, that needs to be considered, specifically the water infrastructure and transmission infrastructure that's needed for that power station also has to then be factored. We need to look at clearly the role of the nuclear power, nuclear options and renewable energies and how that will be become into position.
If you say that the second bullet also is for possible requirements for a third base load for system by 2017, by when do you need that kind of decision? Because we also wanted to ask by making the timeline for decisions to be taken.
Jefferson, the lead time to build a power station is between 7 and 10 years. You need to make this decision this year to be able to have that power station in service by the year 2017 and producing energy. So in the last slide, we've just mapped out the process by which energy planning is done in the country. The Department of Energy is accountable for the country energy plan. The system operator it supports the department in developing that plan. It's a stakeholder engagement process with NERSA, government, and other stakeholders. The Minister of Energy makes the final decision about which technology and what should be built to meet the requirements. This is done in consultation with the Minister of Finance. The decisions are informed by government, energy, and industrial policy, climate change strategies, and affordability. Once that board decision has been made, then the licensing process has to be done by NERSA, and the decision has to be made, the decision for the next base load has to be made in this next year. Currently, there's an IRP process that has been promulgated, and the second one, IRP 2, targeted for June 2010. I could conclude. Chair, we're saying that we've included a slide to look at the energy intensity and the opportunity for savings within the country. We said there's an 8 to 15% opportunity. So this is where South Africa lies in their per capita electricity consumption and the GDP intensity related to energy. So South Africa is more electricity intensive by a factor of 35 to 65% than countries with similar GDP levels. Included that slide again just to show the opportunity we have to move in line with other countries who have a similar GDP. Okay. So there's a challenging task ahead for the country and for Eskom to make sure that this power delivery resource is maintained at the right level. It's a dynamic environment and it needs a constant attention to keep things in balance. There's a plan for action up to 2010 and beyond each year. We can see how we need to be able to manage the imbalances, but it requires collaboration from all stakeholders. We believe for 2010, we showed the pictures that could indicate the installed capacity for the country and the requirements, the actual demand plus operating reserve, indicating that we have surplus, and in that case, we believe that with a high level of work done in the partnership, there's a confidence level in terms that we are moving towards the next phase and for readiness purposes. The vision for success, Chair, if we do not manage this challenge well, it will be constrained on the country's economic growth. So we have to move to a culture of energy efficiency. We have to be able to maintain our plants. We have to have resources to build new infrastructure. And we have to be able to make sure that power is affordable. That is the challenge facing us in terms of energy security. It's not just purely a technical challenge. It needs to be moderated. And there are opportunities for us to drive energy efficiency and making sure that we can have good economic growth on and better usage of every single kilowatt hour that's generated in this country. Thank you.
Just two things before I take members. May I request one thing? That when we use acronyms, you explain what they mean. Because this document and this presentation is not only meant for Parliament, it's also meant for the General Assembly. So when we use concepts like IRC, you must first say it's integrated in your plan, and then begin to use acronyms. But the other thing I want to ask if you, with this presentation, the scenario you expect, whether you are willing to speak to in one sentence or two the implications of the 790 was, or you want to save that for the big day, because I think we must be able to discuss these things and compare them and relate them to one another. I think your contribution should be again, once again, like you did in the beginning, to link this kind of scenario of where you are right at the moment in terms of the service time you got for the next year. Even if you don't give us a detailed plan that you will send me when you talk about the coming one.
Yes, a few comments. I think the first one is we have indicated to the committee that we're confident that on the World Cup and as a country we're going to host the best World Cup ever. In terms of electricity supply going forward, we've indicated that certainly from 2011 onwards that the supply-demand imbalance is very tight. And as a country we would have to work together to meet the requirements of demand. We must understand as South Africans that we're using electricity not that efficient, and we have to focus on that. But we must also understand that what we're currently building in Eskom is playing catch-up. We're not out of the woods. The current projects that we have under construction have followed a significant successful economic growth in South Africa since 1994, with no investment in generation capacity. We're now playing catch-up. We have indicated in our price application of 35% that we would have a shortfall with our funding. We've also indicated that given the regulator's decision that our current operation certainly is supported by that decision. But we would have to look at our new expansion program. And certainly the shortfall will increase significantly given the decision. And that will require us to review our new program. And we must say that Medupi, Kutsile, and everything that we've done and what we've shown you today, they required to deal with the deficit that the country needs. And as South Africa, if we do not invest in this infrastructure, when the economic upturn is there, as a country, we would not be able to partake of that. And we cannot be in a position where electricity constrains economic growth. And similarly, we need to have been in a position where we can see the introduction of new technologies like renewables as well as the introduction of private players in the sector. We have said as Eskom, we cannot do everything on our own. That's what we said clearly. We need others to come to the market. And therefore, we need to create a sustainable situation. So we said we will come back to you with the detailed implications. But quite simply, with what we have received, it certainly impacts us in terms of our funding position. It certainly supports our existing plant. We would have to critically review our new expansion program, which all of it is required, as we've shown you today, for meeting the country's needs. Hopefully that answers your question.
Thank you very much. Members, can I take your comments?
Thank you, Chair. I have quite a few questions, specifically around the demand side and kind of reserve capacity. I mean, looking at the graph here, and you're saying that the largest 138 industrial customers consume nearly 40% of the energy in the country. So obviously these are huge drivers of our energy demand going forward. And a lot of these customers have signed some confidential contracts with Eskom where they procure electricity at a far less rate than what, in fact, households and small businesses do in South Africa. And one of the big factors in your declining profits last year, in fact, were around dividends, and it was around the fact that you weren't achieving enough money from these large customers. What I want to know is, have you renegotiated these deals? Are they going to be paying far higher prices? Is this electricity price increase that has just been announced going to affect them as well? And to what extent will they affect them? Because I think it's crucial that households also know that big customers are going to be paying far more and that they are not going to be shouldering the burden for this. Okay. Well, then my second question then will be around demand going forward, because I'm interested to know what the studies are in terms of your projection that we need another 40 gigawatts in the next 50 years. Where do you see this coming from? Because one of our biggest drivers, as this graph shows, is in fact coming from our mining sector and coming from energy-intensive industries. And if the price of electricity is going up to such an extent, we're not going to be a place that attracts huge energy-intensive industries to our shores. So where is this huge demand in electricity coming from? And the reason why I ask this is Eskom's made this mistake before. The reason why we've mothballed coal-fired power stations was we built too much capacity and then we couldn't use it. So how do we know we're not going to make the same mistake again? And can you just give us some estimates around that?
Thank you very much.
Part of the question I wanted to ask has been asked by Lance already. The key thing is that I'm just trying to reconcile some of the figures, Chairperson. We expect a demand of 37.2 gigawatts. Towards the end, we told that we would have 43.5. How much of that is internally generated and not imported? Because I think we want to get to a fairly neat figure of what our own generation capacity is, and then maybe even then go further with the calculation, subtract from that how much we export, so that I think we can have a far better idea of the reconciliation between the expected demand of 37 and how much of the 43 we have for own usage. I think that just helps, and then I think it goes on to the issue of the reserve margin. Are we dealing with a theoretical construct on the basis that energy is not stored, it's used? Is that effectively a 15% oversupply of electricity on any 25-year period that you're projecting? Because if that is the case, then we take that into that territory that Honorable Freyland spoke about, because on a projected oversupply to chase a reserve margin, we may be putting in a lot of money into infrastructure, and whether that infrastructure cannot be pushed towards the private citizen to build that reserve margin. I think that, for example, the hotels, they're going to make a hell of a lot of money from World Cup 2010. Should there not be a forward incentive for them to build the reserve margin through solar panels on the roofs of these hotels, rather than Eskom having to secure the reserve for the hotels going forward? I just think that it's that kind of territory that needs to be explored a lot more. Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Russell.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to ESCOM for the presentation. I think it can be divided into two distinct sections. The one is short-term, the World Cup, FIFA World Cup, and the other one is more long-term. So I'm going to put a question in each of the two sections. The first one, on page 10, you talk about an increase of only 275 megawatts. Now, can you inform this committee, what are your assumptions which you based this only 275 megawatts? Do you have a plan B? You say you, and how reliable are your the supply authorities outside ESCOM's supply authority? And here I refer to your municipality electricity department. If I calculate correctly, of the total demand in South Africa within your supply, the ESCOM operational capacity versus the total operational country capacity, 2.8 gigawatt comes from municipalities. Now, how reliable are the municipality electricity departments of this 2.8 gigawatt? That is my first question. The assumption of the 275 megawatts, and how reliable are you on the municipality electricity departments?
How reliant are you?
Yes. On the municipality electricity department, because you are very much around the case in Bloemfontein is probably an example. I'm not sure, but you need a few seconds in a world match for power to be cut, and it's a disaster. I'm referring now. Then on the longer term, you're very right, Mr. Thomas, that ESCOM is playing catch up, but you still have to come back to the committee on the tariff proposals. But what I lack in your presentation, and I don't see it, what are your own cost-cut measures in ESCOM to address the current situation of playing catch-up? Secondly, what are you doing to do to make sure that we have efficient electricity usage and supply in South Africa? And of course, we need to engage you, Chairperson, if not in this meeting, in a future meeting. What are your views about the other producers, the independent power producers, and how are we going to make it, not looking solely, narrowly at ESCOM, but what is in the best interest of the country, of South Africa, to move forward into the next 25 years?
Thank you, Dr. Mariana.
Thank you, Chair. So different input, I think the previous members have covered me on one of the questions. Just to comment ESCOM on their preparations as far as 2010 is concerned. It sounds very reassuring. It seems we can go to sleep very soundly knowing that barring any major big thing happening, we are likely to be covered in as far as that is concerned. The question that remains is the period between 2011 and 2013 that is causing concern in as far as ESCOM is concerned. I just wanted to check, basing themselves on their experiences with the wind farms, how quickly can those be set up, and what potential do they have to make a dent on this concern period of between 2011 and 2013?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to add on to what the Honourable Geiling was saying, that when there is a big reserve margin, then ESCOM goes into contracts with these major companies to sell the electricity for about 9 cents a kilowatt hour, which is very little. And then when the reserve margin runs out, the taxpayer have to bear the brunt, and also the poor. So now my question is, why is it not built into the contract that when the power is enough reserve margin, they can have it cheaper? But when it is that the reserve margin is under critical strain, that they must actually pay more, and then you will see them make changes on their using habits. You will have a company like Accelerator Mittal, which it's in the news at the moment. I mean, it buys iron ore at a much reduced rate, and then it gets power at a very reduced rate, and then the price of steel is still sky high. How is that possible? I mean, I'm not kidding. I'm asking the question, is Chancellor House having a cut in this? I would like to know who is taking part in that profit. Is it the government? Why are they not doing anything about it? And then I would like to find out the effect of the infrastructure and the security of the infrastructure plan. When can we see something to that effect? What are we doing about it? It's not you just saying that the police are having to protect it. What are ESCOM itself doing about the security of these pylons? I mean, these pylons I see on a daily basis where they steal off these cross-angle irons, and then if one power line comes down, we take three pylons down with it. I mean, and that is for the price of like 50 rand that they get at a scrap dealer. And what are we doing to secure this? The fencing around these things is all gone. It's been stolen. It's away. I mean, the people phone me in the field every day. So I would like to see the plan that we will be securing our infrastructure, and maybe you can tell us what the percentage of the risk is that there will be a major power outage for one person that has the bright idea to take an axe to chop off one of these massive cables at the time of the soccer, and how quickly we can fix this problem. Thank you.
Don't enlighten the people.
Well, Madam Chair, you must admit there is a problem before you can do something about it. It's like a patio of a pit sphere. It has to burst open, and then we do something about it. Like ESCOM happened with the power outage. It was. We have to admit there's a problem, and then we can do something about it. And I can tell you the next problem is going to be the water in South Africa that's also on a time bomb. So, but it's not for this committee. But we must admit there's a problem, and then we can sort it out.
In fact, the water problem is our problem and ESCOM's problem. We need another conversation on that issue, so it is our problem. Dr. Van Dijk.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to refer what's been said here by ESCOM, that is that the supply chain is very tight, and that we need to cut to the bone because of limited supply. So I get the idea that we are busy at ESCOM now with a crisis management. And that is not new news for South Africa. Now, taking that into account, the IRP that was pushed through on New Year's Eve last year makes provision for water, solar, and wind energy production. But that was based on a 45% increase, if I can remember correctly. Now you receive only 25% increase in tariff. So that is also for the near future not on the table anymore. Then you refer to 24 power stations, of which 80% is coal power. And we are aware that many of these coal power stations are on the brink of reaching their final stage of production. Some of them are very old, some of them are running over capacity. And taking into account the levy on fuel that was introduced by Treasury a short while ago, you will have serious problems with the cost of diesel to run these extra turbines to produce energy for your reserves, because we know that you've got a lot of diesel engines to produce energy. Now, taking that into account, Chairperson, I want to know, after the World Cup, the foreigners will leave South Africa, but the South Africans will stay behind. We are here to stay. What will happen after this World Cup? Because I get the impression that everything is now just concentrating on the World Cup, and then thereafter, we would not like to see you come back to this committee and tell how we're going to survive now. Can you tell us, can you tell this committee, will or can we expect load shedding and blackout after this? You need to have to elaborate on that. You can get to a clear answer, just a yes or a no. Because we need to be warned in advance that there is a possibility of that, not only for the consumers, but also for the industrial sector. But if you think that this crisis management will win the increased demand, just tell us, and then, you know, so that we can get peace of mind on that as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mrs. Bowman? Chairperson, I think we've covered most things. I think a big concern, and I have no doubt that we are going to deliver a really top-class World Cup. But and the plans are great. It's the unexpected, and I think I'm picking up really on Honourable Van Dalen's question there as well. And you know what happens when the unexpected happens with the security of the supply. And I'm pleased to hear that we're working very closely with our municipalities, which is where it all happens on the ground. And we need also, when we talk about saving energy, you know, some of these stadia are burning these massive lights all day long. What are we doing, you know, with the municipalities in relation to that as well? But I think most of the things have been covered. I just have to refer to the Honourable Rasool here with the solar heating panels on top of the hotel. I did pick up a letter in the newspaper over the weekend who was quoting a friend in Germany in his private home had put these solar panels on top of his roof and was in a position to be able to sell electricity to the municipality. So perhaps therein does lie a very good lesson for us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think most of my questions have been covered by my colleagues here. But maybe just to make... It is on, yeah. Most of my questions have been covered by my colleagues here, but maybe just to make a comment on the, you see this indicator on TV where they will tell you that the electricity is under severe stress and all that. I see that almost every day, and I'm a bit worried that, you know, this is the summer right now, and World Cup is going to take place in winter. So now I foresee a situation whereby it's not going to be under severe stress, but we might experience some blackout. I wonder if maybe they could comment on that on that one. And then on the security, maybe also to make a comment also on the security and business continuity. I just want to get a sense about the engineer. I think Mr. Van Dijk has already covered that one about the engineer, those people who steal the infrastructure and all that. If there's any plan by ESCOM to try and cap this tenant by the public of stealing the cable wires and all that, especially during the World Cup. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. No, we did get your apology that you come late. So I was just putting your day.
I'm relieved, Chairperson. Well, Chairperson, thank you very much. On the 17th of June last year, I read an SMS in the presence of the minister and the deputy minister, an SMS from one Jeff in Johannesburg, asking about what COPE will do to save them from the requested tariff hike by ESCOM. I'm not politicking, Chairperson. I'm getting to a point. I just want to say to Jeff, if he's watching at home, or if this thing is like we're tied about that. At least ESCOM has...
Politics will kill you. If you can start politicking,
I'm not. Well, on a more serious note, sir. Two issues, Chairperson. The first one is the ESCOM team keeps on referring to a necessary change of attitude in South Africa insofar as getting energy efficient, and I agree with that. But having said that, Chairperson, we had a report some time back that part of the energy that we are losing, we are really losing it from the boilers, from where this energy is being from the generators and on its way between the generator to the end user, we do lose a lot of energy. And the sense I got was that it's one of those losses that you have to sit and live with. But I want to take that debate a little bit further, Chairperson, to say, are there any innovative ways throughout the world where this kind of a loss is being addressed? Because we can't sit back and add South Africans to be energy efficient, whilst on the other hand we are losing some energy, which in my mind we could innovatively try and address. That's the first question. The second question, Chairperson, is about the smelter in Moka. Billions of rands have been invested in Moka. I mean, that's a public knowledge, everyone knows about this. And one of the cornerstones of that business was to attract the smelter. It's now clear that with the recent Eskom tariff hike, the dream of attracting that smelter to Moka is diminishing faster than I think. I want to check if the issue between, if the discussions between Eskom and the smelter in Moka are closed, finished and closed. Because my main worry is that so much has been invested in that facility, and if it's closed, finished and closed, it will remain a skeleton and a white elephant that it is today.
Yes. Just before I ask my questions, I want to bring the following to committee members. Firstly, Eskom, you have to differentiate to us the different filters in terms of energy consumption, the alkane one and the other, so that you assist us in the process of planning and tell us the kind of smelter that was supposed to be built in Moka. But Eskom owes us one thing, which is Mr. Van Dalen is correctly saying, you owe us, forgive us if you were not part of the delegation, from Mr. Marufa's tenure, we had requested Eskom to come and brief us on the contact around the aluminium smelter, because it's a kind of smelter that, and we have actually demanded that contact should be reviewed. We are still awaiting that report. We also now want to have a report on your risk management plan. We do have in our year plan fairly soon, within the next 8 weeks, we are going to call all SOEs, and we might as well want to start work with Eskom about risk management plan, and we'll start to tease you out on the Izinyonga and theft of infrastructure for electricity production, generation, and distribution. The other thing that I want to put to you is we have also plotted the issue of renewables as well as IPPs as this committee, and we want you to go and prepare the Minister of Energy last week and our minister this morning, if you look at the newspapers, has alluded to Eskom's need to bring in independent power producers. I want to separate this from what the President said in the State of the Nation address, that there will be an independent national agency that will deal with all sorts of things, one of which will be to ensure that Eskom is not a referee and a player at the same time. So there is a category of work that Eskom will have to do preceding the establishment of the national agency and the related regulation and legal framework that is necessary. So we need a very urgent discussion with Eskom also around your plans to bring about independent power producers, because this cannot afford, given the tightness of demand supply curve that you have shown us. We cannot afford to wait for that national agency and the regulatory framework to be in place. Your role is immediate and is current, and you have to come here and tell us what you are planning about it, because you are also planning a process around it. We will also, as a committee, need to interrogate, together with the sister committees and relevant departments, the independent resource plan, the integrated resource plan. I noticed in your presentation that you are very silent on the nuclear part. I don't know why you were silent, because I think it is playing quite dominantly in that independent resource plan. So all your calculations have subtracted the nuclear part. I'm raising this because we have to take decisions pretty fast, because to commission a nuclear plant takes 10 plus years. So I deliberately ask you, if you say we need a third generation plant by 2017, by when should we take that decision? We need that decision this year. So you need to highlight these key points where we need to take decisions, so that we put pressure on government and we put pressure on the decision makers. And I wonder why you are silent on the nuclear thing. So we will interrogate the integrated resource plan with you and the relevant parties. My two and a half questions, if I may abuse the chair. Your stockpile, you say that it's still to be 42. And you still say that this you do by the 1st of April, the 1st of May every year. This is a totally different year. It's a 2010 World Cup year. So your plans to tell us that you will be ready by the 1st of May, like it is a normal year, are discomforting. We have had a very heavy rainy season around the area from which you normally get your coal. And if you do not factor that in, if you still adhere to your 1st of May deadline, we could be running a high risk. So I want to know, why are you proceeding like it's business as usual when there is a World Cup and when we have had an excessively rainy season? In terms of maintenance, my concern also is the concern of Dr. Mangena, 2011 to 2013. I think there are serious red lights flickering, and I don't think that you have highlighted that, but I don't think that you have clearly, categorically told us what are the plans to ensure that we don't. I thought that you would fast track the issue of bringing renewables and bringing IPPs on board to mitigate that risk of 2011 to 2013, because we cannot depend on a new baseload power plant and all other things. My last question, which is a half question, but I think it's also important. There is an argument out there that our power plants, Midupi, Kusile, and others, are overpriced. You need to take us through how you price those power stations. If you say we need a third baseload power plant, we have to make sure that that one too will not be overpriced. You need to take the last issue is relates to the issue I raised in the beginning, that we will have to make sure that a lot of the boilers and other related things of building a power plant will not be imported, like it was the case, like you showed us when we were in Lupalala. We asked you about the various components, where they come from, and you honestly told us that the bulk of them are imported. So the issue of local content, the issue of if it is procurement framework, that is a problem. You have to highlight that to this, so that we get ready together with our sister committees and everybody to make sure that it will be 90% of local content that we are employing when we build the third power plant, and that it will not be at this ridiculously high cost that nobody explains how big they are. We are known to have the most expensive power plant in the world. We have never teased you how you arrive at those numbers, and I think we need a conversation about that. You may answer these questions if we have time. just reminding members that we need some time for our in-house discussion. So depending on how they do in terms of responding to our questions, which are many, we will take a second round, but I doubt that we will have time for this. I will take maybe 2-3 pressing questions. I will talk as to who will ask those questions. Over to you, Esco.
Thank you, Jefferson. I think the issues around prices for Dupi, Steve, I think my colleague Brian can certainly illustrate the difference between how we explain levelized costs and costs which are our benchmark costs and where ours stack up in the benchmark. And I believe we can get that in writing. Certainly, say in terms of responding to what will happen in 2011, I would just like to take the committee back to the one presentation on the table where we show, in fact, it is slide 36, and to highlight that there is, in fact, where we indicate from the supply side and the demand side how we can close the gap. It means very clearly that the RTS, Jefferson, and I know the other acronyms, RTS stands for return to service. Those are the old power stations. We have to continue to commission more power stations. The MTPPP is the IPPs that the Minister of DPE referred to this morning, 400 megawatts. We need to sign that up. The refit is the renewables program of about 525 megawatts, and then we need to contract with the municipality generators to produce at least 400 megawatts, and we believe that's how we can close that gap. In addition, we do need to have demand-side options, and we are setting ourselves targets as a country, 303 megawatts of demand-side management on top, responsiveness from going in and trying to get our consumers to be more flexible demand, something we've been a program we're working on there, and then the ECS, Jefferson, that is one of the power conservation programs we're talking about to our large consumers who consume most of that that energy. So we do have very clear focused areas in different customer categories where we can try and reduce demand to make sure that this gap is met. When we say that we need everyone's support to make this happen, it does need a framework. We believe that the regulator has allowed the money for the medium-term power purchase and the refit. It's very clear at a high level. That's the number that they've allowed for us to sign those contracts, and they've allowed money for the demand-side management, and we now need to try and drive that process to make sure that we close the gaps and we can see what the targets are to close. We will come back, Chairperson, and demonstrate to you, as Brian has said, that once we've unpacked that determination properly and how it impacts on this plan to try and meet the gap.
Rediscuss this plan extensively
right.
Of mitigating the risk of 2011.
That's right, Chair. Chair, the other aspects around the contracts with the aluminium smelters, as you, we will come back and highlight to you just exactly the history of that concept, but at a later stage.
No, the discussion is no longer about the interest. It's about the renegotiation and the exit out of that contract.
Chairperson, we are busy working on this topic. I'd like to provide that feedback of the results of our work in due course. Chairperson, we are busy working on this project right now. We'd like to be able to provide substantive feedback to the committee. We will target next month to show you what has been done, but I mean there's a process happening at this point in time. So,
can you just tell us, in terms of the existing contract, how does this electricity price increase that has recently been announced impact on that existing contract? Will there be an increase, or is it completely outside of that ambit? I think that is an important question.
Jefferson, earlier, of our large consumers, 138 will consume 40% of the energy, but most of them are on the Megaflex tariff rate, and that they do see the tariff increase adjustment. The regulator will determine exactly the profile in the near future. The special negotiated pricing deals are linked on a different base and they move on a different rate in terms of purchase. So that's what we will come back and talk about, that special arrangement.
When you come back in 2 weeks' time, you will talk to them. That's the question that Mr. Sassoon is asking. But in a month's time, you will come and talk to us about the smelter, their future, the exit out of them, and related issues. But when you come back, because we have enough time to unpack the current time, you will address that. How does it impact on the world?
If I can just add to that. The last customers that we've mentioned, 30, the majority of those contracts will be subject to the price increase, and that's the Megaflex that's referred to. There are a few contracts. These are contracts established way back, correctly, when we had excess capacity, and these were established significantly earlier, prior to the country becoming democratic. Those contracts are less than 10, and certainly they're not subjected to then escalate at the tariff increase. We are in discussions in renegotiating those. We started the discussion. I think it is very important as a company that we honor our contractual arrangements. As any country, we should do that, and as a company, we should do that. We have started discussions. I think those discussions are confidential between us and the company that we're talking to, and I think we should be allowed to work through that. Our board has recognized the urgency, and there is a plan, and those are currently ongoing. Allow us to work through that, allow us the confidentiality between us and our counterparts, and we will then come back to you with the conclusion of those discussions. We'll understand the issues and we'll be busy working on it.
Yes, Mr. Damas, but it's been 6 months since we've asked Eskom to bring us on this. We will still stick to our 1 month progress report. It might be that at that point you will not be able to tell us, but we want to get evidence that there is work underway to discuss this issue. So that's why I said initially, you might not be the same group of people that we had put this before, but this matter we have discussed with you more than 6 months ago. So in a month's time, we will rediscuss it. If you are not very ready to give us ultimate answers of your, the end of your, the end result of your negotiations, you will tell us how it is progressing, and then tell us by when will you come back to us. But it's not a matter we can afford to
accept
anymore.
Thanks. I just want to highlight the fact that, I mean, Mr. Damas is asking for patience. We must find out, is it not easier or cheaper to get rid of these contracts? And, I mean, we are sitting here in a crisis that we don't have excess capacity. We honor our contracts. And if those contracts have to run for another 5 or 10 years at the rate it is going, and we... then we have, like we were saying, the taxpayer have to pay for it. Would it not be easier if those contracts are 50 years old to terminate them and then pay the fine on it or whatever it is? I mean, what we need to know what those are.
No. I want to close this discussion about the transfer contract. We did say to Eskom it's highly desirable for them to exit out of those contracts. That is the recommendation we've given them, and that is the mandate you have given them. They will come back to us and tell us whether they managed to do that or what prevented them from exiting out of those contracts. But that is our recommendation. But let's close it here so that we give them a chance to answer all the other questions, and we will engage them again in a month's time on this contract.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the demand question, there was one around the 275 megawatts and what underpins that, and then the future growth projections. I'd like my colleague Cannon to address that. And then there's a question specifically around the security, infrastructure security, pylon issues like that, specifically for the 2010 World Cup event, and the liability of and our partnership with the host city. I would like my colleague Alvin to address that. Would be the main theme touched on all the questions then.
Okay, Chair, I'll start with the World Cup demand requirements and to look at how those assumptions were built up, and then I'll go to the medium to long term picture to the questions that are asked. If you look at how did we, what are the assumptions underlying the 275 megawatts? We first did some background work and visited sites in Germany. We also looked at how the European Cup was hosted by Austria and Switzerland. We did some work with Korea and Japan. And then based on how they needed to meet the power requirements of the stadium, the precinct, the fan park, hospitality sites, and so on. We looked at their power requirements. We then worked with our host cities to look at what they intended to do locally, and over time have refined that number. In fact, we started with initially a higher number, and we have refined it down as we got more clarity on the needs in each host city. So there is some detail per host city about what their needs are. In fact, that's getting more and more specific as we get close to the World Cup. So we're pretty confident about that extra power demand for that period. So that's the first question. The second question, as we talk, the assumptions are clear. You must remember that Eskom generates about 95% of the electricity generated in South Africa, but we also don't supply all the customers as well. So if you just look at Eskom, we have about 40.7 gigawatts of our own operational capacity. The Munichs then have about, the municipalities as well as some large industrial customers. Good example that people know are Sasol, who already have their own generation. Kelvin Power Station in City Power is another. Chwane there's a power station in that area called Chwane and Pretoria West, if I'm not mistaken. So those have generation capabilities. That's about 1.8 gigawatts. That's where you get the 43.5 gigawatt installed capacity. When we talk about peak demand, we're talking about what Eskom has to supply. So when you look at the reserve margin, we keep putting Eskom's reserve margin and there's a country one. We must also be clear that the country's reserve margin and total energy needs are what the Department of Energy is now busy with. The Integrated Resource Plan for Eskom, although a significant component, is not the only component. So we've got to balance that. So that's the first example. Then how reliable was the question, the 1.8 gigawatt of extra generation? I think there are concerns around reliability, and that's something we can't answer in detail because the municipalities would have better information, and I think that's a question we can't give more detail on, but we've got to, it is important for the supply demand. Then if you look at the long-term growth scenarios, that's the reason we do scenarios, low, moderate, and high. It is informed by a combination of discussions with customers where we look at their pipelines over the next 30 years. They put a wish list. We work with them to see if that wish list is realistic because we need to also understand what to do on the transmission network as well as on the supply. The municipalities supply directly about 40% of the customers. They give us information and sometimes give us access to their big customers, which we discuss with them as well. So we build this up from the bottom. Then we also look at the top. What are the links between GDP and electricity growth? What are the possible reductions in energy intensity over the next 30 years? And that's where you get those numbers. It's possible, correct, that we might have overestimated or even underestimated. And that is why it's important that we have this public process to develop the RFP. And then hopefully the entire country will buy into what is the growth rate for a prosperous South Africa. I think that will help in that discussion rather than saying it's Eskom's view or somebody else's view. So Eskom has done some work, but it's a contribution to the debate, and we're hoping the DOE will finalize that process. So that's where we are, hope for the demand. I don't know if I missed anything in that question. Oh, sorry, the reserve margin.
I'm extremely concerned with the answer about the electricity generated at 1.8 gigawatts. If Eskom says they can't answer about the reliability, who's going to answer that question?
We will have to call Sauda and the municipality concerned, look for a way of getting assurances from them. But I think coupled with that is this thing, if we agree on the short oversight visit, to tease out that reliability also. But I think we need to plan for FALRA and the related ones, because we know them, those ones that are either a representation of them or all of them, if we can, to ask them that question. Thanks for flipping it.
We take the responsibility, or somebody champions it. because this is the thin end of the wedge of the next 100
million. I'm proposing that we take that.
Thank you, Chicken. I answered the questions relating to the 20-gen specific project questions. I think the first question was how are the Munich's readiness or the whole city's readiness? I think the last meeting we had was on the 4th of February, the ESI forum, where the municipalities are present. The status chair across the 9 host cities, the one directly supplied by Eskom is Rustenburg. The status is actually very good, Chair. We have two municipalities that we are currently working with. That is Mangaung, where we're specifically looking at generation, standby generation for them, as well as additional firm supply. And the other one is in an Alfred area, Chair. Now, I'd like to relate the two incidents that you referred to. I first want to support the member in saying that there was no issues in the Concept Cup. Post the Concept Cup, we had two local games, and we had an incident at the Loftus-Versfeld Stadium, and then an incident at the Bloemfontein Stadium. Those were all localized incidents, Chair. And Orlando, correct. Yes, correct. Those were all localized incidents at the stadium, Chair. In the case of Bloemfontein, it was in fact that there was no hot standby available. And hot standby really means that the generator is actually available, ready and running. It took them between 10 and 15 minutes to actually get the generator to run. So in terms of host city preparedness, Chair, in discussions with the municipalities, there is a sense of comfort that they have looked at the right infrastructure. They are looking at the risk treatment plan, and they have in fact mitigated a number of these risks. Chair, the question relating to the theft of infrastructure, I think
what are you saying? You said you can't answer that question. You are giving us an assurance. You're confusing us.
Sorry, Chair, the difference is my colleague spoke about the generation capacity, the 1.8 gigawatts. What I am referring to is the preparation of the municipalities for the networks to the stadiums, public viewing areas, etc., the 2010 specific infrastructure projects that the municipality is running. So not the generation capacity, Chair.
Okay, fine. Mr. Dunn, are there points where you are responsible to a certain point in terms of distribution and not up to the bulk in the stadium? Because that is our concern. Are you telling us for all the stadium, for all the whole cities except Rustenburg, you are responsible for distribution up to the bulk? Because if you are not, then we need to target areas where your distribution ends somewhere outside the stadium or just before the stadium so that we address the concerns of the relevant people.
Chair, that's correct. Eskom supplies bulk up to a point. From that bulk point, the municipality takes accountability into the stadiums and the surrounding areas, with the exception of Rustenburg, where we supply the stadium directly. So, yes, Chair, you're right.
Just as a follow-up on that, the stadiums that went there, I mean, it's easy to say that it was a local game and it wasn't the Confederation Cup or the World Cup, but it does make the people that are looking at the TV in this country sitting there and watching what will happen if it is a World Cup game. I mean, nothing can tell us what the future is bringing us, so it might happen. These people, the perception is now there that it can go dead in the middle of a game. So ESCOM is supposed to make sure that it doesn't happen now, because it doesn't bode well with the people sitting out there and then going to need to pay more money for the electricity, and it just doesn't look good out there.
Let's be very clear. The two incidents that happened certainly was not an ESCOM supply interruption. This was a situation with the stadiums. We are working with those stadiums to make sure we will assist, not only looking at our own supply, and assist wherever we can in dealing with making sure supply is secured right up to the bottom. And we will not stop in terms of our efforts as far as that is concerned. A lot of work has gone in, and we're comfortable with that, and we will continue to assist the municipalities where they require assistance.
Yeah, now let's conclude this point briefly, because I see two here. We note your assurance. There is a point where your assurance was not forthcoming, not your assurances, But I think we must still take the responsibility, as Dr. Koranov is asking correctly, who will take the responsibility to double the assurance and to make sure that everybody that should be playing their role is playing their role to prevent a repeat of those three incidents. The third one was Orlando Stadium. And I think at Orlando Stadium it affects twice. So does it satisfy members that we take the responsibility upon ourselves let me not propose from the chair. Let me hear you out. Dr. Koranov and Mr. Rasool. And
I agree with you, Chairperson, but I want to ask ISCOM whether they have a forum or a meeting place or a joint platform where they discuss exactly this issue, where ISCOM provides the power up to a certain point in time. After that point, the municipality takes over to make the globe. Where do you discuss that? Do you have a platform? You mentioned Sasol, Kelvin, Tswane, and there may be others. Surely there must be a joint effort somewhere where you hand over this item in the race. We cannot leave it for chance. There's no way that we can use it. Whether it's our responsibility as a committee or whether there's a platform to discuss that there's no breakdown in communication or supply.
Chairperson, I think that whatever the case may be, whether it's a municipal issue, whether it is a stadium management issue, whether it's the ESCOM issue, I think that, as the opening slide showed, it's a brand South Africa issue. No one will make a distinction overseas about who was responsible. And I think that means that the pressure is on all of us as decision makers, and particularly on ESCOM, because it has been, in a sense, in the dark box over the last few years. And therefore, I think, more than a forum and a platform, I think that part of what our committee should be doing is to examine what are the regulatory imperatives that will ensure that no one stands on their own autonomy to try and say, ESCOM, you don't enter our stadium, or to say, don't enter our municipality, we sort our things ourselves, because at the end of the day, the stadium and the municipality doesn't get the blame, it's ESCOM, and by implication, government. And therefore, I think maybe what we should be doing is to go through the regulatory fine print and to strengthen the platforms that exist with a regulatory treaty or agreement that allows for a fluidity of, in a sense, control and command over the electricity supply from the generator to the valve. I think that really is the is for me the key issue as we go forward.
So in conclusion of this point, both ESCOM and ourselves will take the responsibility to make sure that all the loopholes are closed to prevent the repeat of the incident we are referring to. ESCOM will go and liaise with their partners insofar as this issue is concerned, and will keep us posted within the next 10 working days. And from our side, we will also do the necessary things, and we'll be communicating with ESCOM what plans we are planning to undertake as well. Dr. Fandi.
Chairperson, just clarity, if you say that ESCOM and we ourselves, are we part of some sort of an operational room then? We as a committee.
We ourselves as a committee of parliament.
Yeah, but we can just get information or the assurance or clarity from the entities. I mean, it's not our function for me and you, Chairperson, for example, to go to a certain field, a playing ground, getting up to.
That's not what I meant.
So I just want to get clarity on
that. That's not what I meant. And we're not going to belabor at this point. We know exactly what must we do and what we can do. We know for sure that we cannot be climbing on those stadia and those municipalities areas, but we know exactly what we do.
Madam Chair, I just want to make a suggestion, and that is, I've seen a lot of times when you go out the robot is dead, and you phone the municipality, they say, well, it's ESCOM. You phone ESCOM, it's the municipality. So you actually have to get them both there, and then they decide what the problem is. So that we make sure that at these stadiums, somebody from ESCOM is there to talk to the right at that time when they need it. Otherwise, The municipalities still have to call Eskom. Eskom says, no, it's your problem. No, nobody goes and look at the problem. They must decide together what the problem is right there.
That's the platform that Dr.
Yes.
put an office for trouble. So I'm sure Eskom heard us thoroughly and clearly. Thank you very much. We may proceed. We're not doing very well in terms of that.
Could I respond to the question around the security and the theft? I think last month, Chair, was a significant month for us. We had a landmark ruling in court, and that is we had two individuals prosecuted for theft. Now, that has never happened before. And so we do have legislation that now supports us. In addition to that, Chair, we're also moving away from... We've got 28,000 kilometers of lines. It's really impossible, transmission lines, to cover all the lines. But what we have identified is the key infrastructure. And we've beefed up security, both physical security as well as technology around that chair to assist us. We've also been on a big drive to go and visit the scrapyard that are actually purchasing this illegal stuff. And we have, to an extent, been successful, both ourselves in conjunction with municipalities, to recover some of our equipment and then forward, going forward to then try and get prosecution on this issue, Chair. But it is an ongoing issue, Chair. It's not a simple issue to resolve. We've also integrated quite well with the SAPS, with the South African Police Services, in that they actually step up their initiatives around our supply areas as well. So we want to see more visible policing from that side as well.
Let me just cut you short. We said we want you to bring a plan that we will interrogate with you. We don't accept that you tell us that it's 28,000 kilometers. That's not acceptable. Because anyway, even South Africa cannot police every corner, but we expect the police to do their way. So I think we must step off this point. We must bring back that plan for risk management of those kind of things, and we will meet you at that point and at that time. Mm-hmm. It is a serious issue that we don't think we can answer in 1 minute in this meeting. So you may proceed to other issues.
Jessica, I think those are all the things that were raised.
Let us go to the rest of it, and then if we still have some outstanding, the members are welcome to alert us to that. There was a question relating to what is Eskom doing in terms of its own efficiency, how it's focused on running its own business, and what is our view on ITPs. We have indicated in our price application, particularly with the changes that we've made, how we focus both on our operating cost efficiency as well as our primary energy efficiency. With what the regulators allow me would need to continue that, in terms of how we more efficiently run our business and how we better procure our coal, as well as our capital costs and how we deal with that. We have shared with this committee, when this committee visited our Matimba power station, Madupi power station, we shared with you specifically the capital savings initiative and the progress in that regard. And again, we can update you on that. We have said quite clearly that the electricity supply going forward is constrained. And therefore, as Eskom, we cannot do all of this. Our view on ITP is quite simple, that we would support the introduction of them within the market to assist in terms of the supply of electricity in the country and meeting our energy needs. There was a question around wind farms and the 2011 to 2013 period. How many, how quickly can these be set up? Eskom, we had a wind farm planned of 100 megawatts, and we must understand that preparation for all power stations will take time. Essentially, the issues around permitting, the record of decision, the environmental impact assessment, the acquisition of land, as well as the connection of that to the Eskom grid or any specific grid. And it certainly would be an option. I think the private sector has indicated through our bidding process that some of these would be able to come on stream starting in this period. I don't think all of it would be ready by 2013, very quickly be put up, but the lead time is a lot shorter, certainly, provided all the permits are in place, it's a lot shorter than burning coal plants or even burning gas plants. I think we've dealt with the question around the big contracts, the aluminium contracts, and the pricing and the exit of that. And as we said, we're in a process of discussions, and we will come back to the committee on that. On the theft issues, we will come back with a security plan and deal with our whole risk management plan in that regard. There was a question around the question by the member, the honourable member at the back, was the issue around load shedding. Will it come back? Will it not come back? We have indicated to Eskom that the supply is going to be extremely tough from 2014 to 2013 until we have the baseload power stations coming in. It's very important that the country work together to prevent any type of power interruption. And really, I must reiterate that the issue around energy savings are crucial for South Africa to avoid any load shedding going forward. We will work hard to ensure that we do what we have to do and you have our commitment in that regard. There was a specific question from the honourable member at the back around the indication that you see on TV that is red and we're in summer. And it's quite an important point. And the question was, we're going to go into winter with high demand, will it not go worse? South Africa, as Eskom, we do all our outages in summer months because the demand is low. So as we said today, we do maintenance of over 4,000 megawatts and more in the summer months. In winter, that drops close to zero. So we make sure that all our maintenance programs are finished, and particularly this year that we will complete that. I think we will have about one outage of about 500 megawatts that will be happening during winter. So that's why you see the difference. That most of our plants are not on planned maintenance and are all available then to supply the demand. And that's the distinction. So that's why in summer months we have a specific system for status that is quite constrained because a lot of our supply plants are on outage.
May I come in with this? Is it possible to get from you your plans for maintenance just before and just after, so that we have a check and balance mechanism of knowing whether your maintenance is planned, or because you can easily say it was a planned maintenance when it was not a planned maintenance. You can hide behind the fact that it's a planned maintenance. Is it possible for you to supply us with this plan?
Sure, we have a plan. We produce every year a summer plan, and every year we produce a winter plan, and some of it is actually published. And we classify our unplanned maintenance very clearly versus our planned maintenance. These are international standards, and that's how
we
have
it.
Yes, we have that. We can let you have that. See, there was a question around the generator energy loss. It thinks the energy gets lost in terms of the generation process, it gets lost in the transmission process. Within both areas, we benchmark that quite closely to make sure that those are well within the benchmark. And I can assure you, for our transmission system, they're well within the benchmark. Within our generation system, they're also well within the benchmark. But it does not mean that we cannot get new innovative ways to save in terms of our own use of electricity. And I can assure you that we have a specific program in Eskom that focuses on how do we reduce our own energy use internally. And that is currently being rolled out. How do we have more efficient motors? How do we have new technologies that we can implement in our plants in order to reduce the use of energy? There was a question around Kuka, and maybe Kuka contract.
I'm sorry before you go ahead. Thanks for the response, but can I check, has Eskom done some fact-finding mission to other countries around the world to check if there are innovative ways that could help in addressing the issue?
Chair, remember there's two components, or maybe three components. One is we've got existing infrastructure on the transmission network and generation plants. On both cases, we've done peer review. And we have also had staff call. We're pretty clear what those benefits could be. Some of it requires capital investment as well, and others requires us to also focus on having enough infrastructure so you don't constrain. It's like a road. The more you use the road and the less time you have to repair it, you actually make it worse, and you could actually slow down the traffic. It's the same concept. You actually need to build more lanes to allow you some flexibility. It's a combination of making sure you know what has to be done and getting the time to do it, and that's the challenge we have. We have internal targets. We're trying to save 1 billion kilowatt hours internally, and we have a program that tracks that progress, and that looks at our generation plant and other areas to see how much energy we can save.
So you have done the benchmark, and in short, you are addressing the problem.
Yes, Chair.
We can just go to the Cooper.
Okay. Chair, as you know, with Eskom, Rio Tinto, Alcan, the Department of Trade and Industry, and also the Department of Public Enterprises, have been involved in the discussions around the Alcan smelter. Now, the contract was cancelled by Rio Tinto Alcan, but in consultation with DTI and Eskom. And the main issue was two things. The one is Eskom was clear that the price that had to be paid had to be reflective of the cost of supply, and any reduction from that had to be clearly understood, and the right person take that up. That means it must be clear and transparent if it's going to be in a tariff or if it's a subsidy or an incentive. It must be clear who's going to do that. I think that the clarity was not there, so that was one, and Eskom couldn't give that assurance. The second is we were in a constrained power situation, and post-2017 decisions have not been made on what has to be done in terms of building new power stations. So Eskom on its own cannot guarantee that the supply would be available, but obviously that's the case in any country in the world. I don't see any country that has made its decision for 20 years' time. They probably made decisions for the next 10 years. So we are trying to say you can't... China as well. They've got 5-year plans, 30-year plans, and they've got 5-year implementation. So that's a great example. So Chair, those are the reasons. Eskom has always said that any customer is able to talk to us about their power requirements on those bases, and we welcome every discussion with customers, so it's not unique to also reach into Alcan. So we're always open, and we have been continuously engaging with them. But we have said these are the requirements we have. These are the conditions under which we go forward.
It's not just a sudden follow-up. I accept the explanation, and it makes business sense. But I am worried about the billions that have been invested in. I think
I don't think it's
going to ask. Let me just finish. Can I suggest that outside this meeting, as the committee, I suggest that we should find a way of discussing how best to engage DTI, Department of Public Enterprise, and then the people.
Yes, Madam Chair, the follow-up I have is on what Mr. Dahmer said, and that's the cost of the power stations. When we started off, it was going to cost us 100, and help me if I'm wrong, it was going to cost us 115 billion to build Kusile. And then before we went on that trip, it was a figure of 150 was thrown around, and then there was cost-saving measures, and then it went down to 125. And I see in the media lately an amount of 200 billion is being thrown around. So I don't know if those same costs, if it's still 125 billion, the cost of Kusile, or if that price has now gone up. Because in the media, obviously, you say we mustn't believe what we read in the media, but when we read the 150 in the media, it was actually like that, but they brought it down because they say it cost. So that is only a little, maybe clarity on that.
Chair, yes. Also, just in short, to get clarity on the presentation, we become aware of all they want to do in the near future and to maintain sustainable power supply. Now, the latest figure in terms of your capital needs for this infrastructure program, the last meeting when Mr. Bobby Gopsell was here last year, he said that it will cost 300 billion. Before that, it was 285 billion. Mr. Maroha gave that figure to us when he was still CEO. Mr. Gopsell gave us a figure of 300 billion, and the latest figure, Chairperson, in the beginning of this year is almost close to 400 billion, if I'm correct. Now, I just want to know from Eskom, because nothing has been said, where the resources of capital will come for the capital investment program. If we can get clarity, please, on those resources of capital.
No, let me be fair to Eskom. I think those are legitimate questions, but I think we're asking them at the wrong meeting.
because we have asked, I know I asked about the cost of the touted first power generation plant and spoke about the costing of these power plants and the, but I was doing that particularly that we create a space where we can have an engagement about the cost of these power plants, how reliable they are. So I think that needs a totally different meeting. Yeah. Because we ask them to prepare for security of supply.
Chair, I agree with you, but it was just that Mr. Damos have created the impression that we are still on the 125 billion, but I am not agreeing with that.
No,
maybe,
it's okay. We'll continue to disagree with him, but in another meeting, where we bring them back to interrogate the cost of this power plant, both existing and planned ones, and how they arrive at those figures, and why those figures keep on fluctuating and changing with the move of time.
I wanted to say that when that meeting takes place, actually, I wonder if we could be asking too much, if they could just come with a breakdown exactly as to how do they arrive at that figure. This turbine costs so much, the bricks, the mortar costs so much, and all that. Will it be asking too much?
No, in fact, that is the intention of, that is the purpose. Because how else do you arrive at knowing whether the figure is realistic if you don't look into the various components and adding up the whole thing? So that's the, we want exactly to do that. Thank you very much. We're not discussing the cost of public spaces now. We're making a statement that there is a perception that they are overcosted, and you have to come back to us to prove to us that they are not overcosted, and you will have to break them down, and you will have to tell us why they fluctuate. In this audience, you say this, and then the next 2 weeks, you say this and that, and all those things, but not today. You may proceed, please.
So we'll do that, we'll come back, but you have a perception, and this is correct, the perception, that our power plants are not overpriced. Be very clear, they're comparable with any plant being built anywhere else in the world, and we will certainly demonstrate that to the committee as you have asked for. And I think that also we should make that very clear. There was a question that you raised in terms of what happens to the independent power producers prior to the independent system operator. And as we have indicated in the presentation, really our intent would be that we expedite any capacity in the IPP sector that's available. And in that regard, we will now work towards concluding the agreement for the medium-term price, the medium-term power purchase agreement that has been announced yesterday. And that needs to happen as a matter of urgency. You had a question around nuclear and the nuclear power facility. The choices of capacity would be dictated by the integrated resource plan. As Eskom, we remain firm that nuclear must be an option for South Africa's energy needs going forward. It needs to be a very important option to meet the country's future requirements. It deals with the country's solution to meeting, amongst other things, the renewables, everything else required, but nuclear as a baseload capacity in meeting the country's emission targets that it sets. It will also assist in the water use in the country. And if we need a nuclear plant by 2020, then again, the same thing is valid. We need to make the decision very soon. The coal stockpiles is not business as usual. We must firstly stress that at Eskom we have adequate coal stockpiles as we stand today. We have an expected of 42 days and the plans are in place to move the coal from the mines right to our stations within the next few months. Obviously we have a big issue in terms of logistics within Mpumalanga, and all of those plans are in place and the coal stockpiles is in the process of being recovered. All the coal has been procured. You had a question in terms of maintenance, and I think you're correct that for us to be adequate maintenance, we need to fast-track the introduction of renewables and IPP. Chair, I believe those are all the questions that the committee members have asked, and hopefully we've covered all of them.
I think so, too.
Just
like
one concluding remark, that on our part, we need to coordinate and to speak to related sister committees as well as related departments, not only in terms of the integrated resource, but with all other matters that are related to energy security, including the issue of the infrastructure bill. The reason I'm emphasizing this is in the industrial policy action plan that the minister tabled before Parliament last week, there was no vision as to whether we are going on a nuclear path. But it seems that the other sectors which are very central in the energy production cycle, like Eskom, are still not knowing whether there is a decision or not. So from our side, we need to speak to the powers that be. We need to ensure that there is coordination, and we need to ensure that information reaches the role players as fast as we can, because that impacts on your planning. Because clearly, in your plans going forward, you have not factored in a nuclear power station, because it will seem that it has not yet been communicated very firmly that is the route to go. But I just want to say that we need more coordination from the relevant bodies in Parliament and the relevant departments, and we invite ESCOM to such meetings. And the very first one will be the Interministerial Committee, where we'll tease out the issue of the funding model for ESCOM. Having said this brings us to the end of this meeting. I want to thank ESCOM very much for a good presentation that we prepared within a very short space of time. And we will be in communication with you regarding the issues emanating from the tariff hike as well as the funding model. Members, let's stay behind for a few minutes to deal with our in-house issues. We have to adopt the oversight report. We have to deal with the issue of Transnet pension fund proposal. Thanks. Members of the ANC, the study group meets at the end of the Middle East Valley House Assembly. What is the value of the study group?